Assalamu alaikum. This will be the second part of the consciousness chapter. So let's talk about behaviorism. As we were talking about materialistic approaches the last time in part one of the consciousness chapter, so let's talk about behaviorism. Well, again, if I would have to explain it in one line, it will be, it's what you do. Well, it postulates that consciousness is defined in behavioral terms. Behaviorists assert that a person only has a certain conscious state if it can be verified by that person's behavior. You understand, right there? Now, another point is that it denies subjective consciousness. And it denies subjective consciousness experience. And it defines consciousness as the way we act rather than the way we are. So it defines us in the way we act rather than the way we are. So yeah, actually, but it fails to acknowledge that humans can have mental states without displaying any behavior. Now, you can really have that, you can think of any example, because this point that behaviorism fails to acknowledge that humans can have mental states without displaying any behavior is actually this, you know, consumes every walking moment of our lives. And as David Lund argues, we cannot dismiss the fact that we do experience inner subjective states that are not always revealed via our behaviors. So this was behaviorism. So of course, now this is also something that cannot prove from where the consciousness began, where it came from in the first place, and you know, it cannot even prove totally how it works. Now, the next is functionalism. Now again, if I have to display it in one line, I will say just a bunch of inputs, comma, mental states and outputs. Well, it postulates that consciousness is defined as the functions or roles it plays, emerging from a set of relations with an organism or system, just like a computer. So, well, another point is that a function is based on input slash, comma, mental state, comma, output. Let me give you an example for an easy understanding of what functionalism is. So, if I see my bus arriving, now that's the input. I see my bus arriving, that's the input. I experience the mental state of worrying that I may be late. That's the mental state. Now I run towards the bus to stop it, or I run towards the bus stop. That's the output. Well, some of the objections of functionalism are, it is unable to consider subjective conscious states because they cannot be understood functionally. It's very clear. It is unable to consider subjective conscious states because they cannot be understood functionally. We cannot understand subjective conscious states functionally. It does not follow that just by knowing all of the inputs and mental states and output, we will somehow know what it is like for a particular organism to experience a mental state. It does not tell us how and why mental states arise from a set of relations. So this was, you know, just, you know, I'm just touching the crust. I'm not, you know, going in deeper in deep studies. I'm just touching the crust, and I'm telling you that none of the theories that we have right now that, says that it can prove consciousness can be believed upon, just like Darwin's theory of evolution. If you study Darwin's theory of evolution, well, there are many blunders and mistakes that makes Darwin's theory of evolution just like another theory of evolution. And I have given, I have made a podcast on it, and you can see it's by the name Evolutionary Delusions. Now, the next type of materialistic approach is emergent materialism. Now again, if I have to explain it in one line, it will be, it's in the complexity. Now, it occurs when things have arranged in such a way that they transform into complex entities and have complicated causal relationships from which phenomena appears. Well, they are of two types, weak and strong. The weak emergent materialism asserts that we will eventually understand subjective consciousness once all the complex physical processes are understood. Well, no. I don't think so. Because it does not follow that it will lead to the knowledge of what it is like for an organism to have an inner subjective consciousness. We just because we know every single thing about the brain does not mean that we know how an organism feels when it has, have an inner subjective experience, conscious experience. Now, if subjective consciousness remains, then emergent materialism suffers from the same problem as reductive materialism. That's very simple, because you cannot just prove it, and it goes like. Well, the next point is the strong emergent materialism says the subjective consciousness is a natural phenomena. It says that we can learn X from Y. But how that happened is so complex that we don't understand it. This does not make any sense. It's absurd. Because just by dismissing subjective consciousness, it does not prove anything at all. Just because you don't understand it and it's complex and I don't know what gymnastics these atheist neurobiologists and neuroscientists trying to play, like, Sam Harris. I don't know what they want to play, but just by dismissing subjective consciousness does not prove anything at all. Now, this proves that subjective consciousness is out of what science can solve, as science requires observations, and we do not have any observation for subjective conscious experiences, because subjective conscious experience is not a material, it's immaterial. Now, let's talk about some non-materialistic or immaterialistic approaches. Now, humans are more than just matter and energy. This is what non-materialistic approaches usually say. These are the basic ideas on which all of the non-materialistic approaches work. Now, humans are more than just matter and energy, but it does not invoke God for an answer. Now, the first type of non-materialistic approach is substance dualism. Now, if I have to explain it in one line, it will be, they are different, but we do not know how. Now, the first point is that it is the view that there are two different substances. The first one is physical, the next one is non-physical. Now, it says that brain is physical and consciousness is non-physical, but they still interact with each other. We experience the conscious states can cause physical states and vice versa. Well, if I'm feeling sad, and that's the conscious state, I can frown or cry, that's the physical state. On the contrary, if I bump my head on an object, I will feel the inner subjective experience of pain. Now, some of the objections are, if brain and consciousness are different, then knowing how they interact is impossible. Now, this statement is also known as the interactionist problem. The statement that I just quoted, if brain and consciousness are different, then knowing how they interact is impossible. This is also known as interactionist problem. If substance dualism adopts non-theistic approach, the question it will fail to answer are, well, where did that immaterial substance came from? And the bigger question is, how does it exist in the physical universe? Because as atheist scientists and people of philosophical naturalistic people, they believe that everything can be proved via naturalistic physical processes. Now, I don't think so that something that is immaterial is physical also. Now, I do not have much knowledge on philosophy, so it could be that I could be wrong, but still, these two questions, where did that immaterial substance came from and how does it exist in the physical universe, cannot be explained by substance dualism. Now this is a bit of a tongue twister. This is the second immaterialistic approach, and it's known as epiphenomenalism. Now, of course, again, if I have to explain it in just one line, it's a lucky accident. That's how I will explain it in one line. Now, it says that physical states cause conscious states, but not vice versa. Physical states can cause conscious states, but conscious states cannot, cause physical states. Now, the popular rejection includes that if it is true, a sensation of pain in my hand due to the hot flame plays no causal role in my hand moving away. It is due to an accident. That's That's just the most absurd thing that I've ever heard. Just imagine a patient with depression saying he gets anxiety attacks. And he's telling his doctor that he gets anxiety attacks. But the doctor tells him that it has nothing to do with it. Now, as much of a tongue twister it is same that it is, you know, absurd. It's just absurd. It's not... You understand what I'm saying, right? It's just absurd. How... literally, if I suppose my hand... or let's say if you go to a jungle, a forest, and you get lost, and there's this lion in front of you, and he's literally roaring at you, and he runs towards you. Now, if you jump to the other direction or run from the lion, it is not because of your conscious state; it is because of an accident. Now, just think about it. How much absurd this is. Now, the third non-materialistic approach is known as panpsychism. Of course, as I have been doing from the start and even in the part one, how to explain it in one line, the one line will be everything is conscious. Now, it is somewhat similar to property dualism, which asserts that one substance exists but contains two properties, like physical substance exists but it contains physical as well as non-physical substances. Now, panpsychism asserts that matter contains a form of subjective consciousness. You know, one form of panpsychism states that all matter is conscious in the same way as humans are. The other form asserts that consciousness contained in matter is in a basic state, also known as proto-consciousness. Alright? The other form asserts that consciousness contained in matter is in a basic state. And this is also known as proto-consciousness. Now, the problems with this are, well, the absence of evidence for the claim that matter contains subjective consciousness, and like protons, neutrons, electrons, or even quarks do not exhibit any signs of this. Now, the second problem is that this approach fails to provide an adequate metaphysical or physical explanation. It does not provide any type of metaphysical or physical explanation. The third problem is that there are no example of consciousness existing outside of subjective experience of a living entity. For instance, what does pain mean without a self or an I? You understand? I, that means me, self. And the fourth and the last problem is, how can a unified consciousness experience emerge from many pieces of matter that all contain a form of consciousness? Like, how do individual pieces of matter that contain subjective consciousness add up to a meaningful, unified experience? Well, if panpsychism is true, then our experience would be incoherent or less unified. And let me quote you what Professor Edward Fraser said. He explains this as, the experience has a coherent significance of meaning and significance or meaning for a single subject of experience. Well, you are not only aware of the shape, texture, color as separate elements, but are aware of them as a book. And it is you who are aware of them rather than my myriad neural elements. Somehow each being aware of one particular aspect of the book. Suppose if you read the book, then you are aware of the color, the texture, the size, and every single thing. You are aware of it, not the myriad neural events. Well, somehow each being aware of one particular aspect of the book. Now, God is the best explanation. Let me tell you why. The first point is, it answers a question that none of the existing views have answered. Where did consciousness came from? Now, as Professor J.P. Moreland explains, our knowledge of the natural world would give us positive reasons for not believing that irreducible consciousness would appear in it. Well, if matter and consciousness are distinct, it follows that consciousness could not emerge from matter. If matter contains consciousness, now did consciousness arise in matter? The thing is that theism answers how consciousness could have entered the physical world. According to a non-theistic approach to consciousness, it seems to have miraculously popped into existing without any physical explanation. Now, just tell me one thing. What is going to take you more faith to believe in? Like, things magically popping into and out of existence, or that there is a creator, a fine tuner, a designer who have designed all of the, you know, all of the seven heavens and the earth and the other things. So if the universe was created with matter being in the beginning, then it is impossible for consciousness to have existed. On the contrary, if a being with consciousness creates us, then it is possible. Of course, God is conscious. It is important that God is conscious about himself and about his creation. And the third thing is that theism explains our ability to have subjective conscious states and the fact that we have awareness of what it is like to be ourselves experiencing taste, sounds, and textures. It's very simple. God is the best explanation, as God says in the Quran, and he is the all subtle, the all aware. Literally, he says the all aware. Beautiful. Now, my approach is a sense of theistic dualism. Now, this approach is a sense of theistic dualism. It is a metaphysical thesis that provides a comprehensive explanation. As God says in the Quran, do they not reflect within themselves? Because God knows that we are more than just matter. We have a soul, we have conscious experiences, we have consciousness. That's beautiful. Okay, so this ends the chapter about consciousness, and the next podcast will be about the designed universe, the, you know, the fine precision, you know, the fine tuning of the universe, the divine precision. So we'll be talking about that, and until then, thank you very much. Jazakallahu khairan.